Coming up on the next Fan Up podcast, Kevin explains how the NFL draft is like a typical night out.
When you go out on Friday night, Saturday night, it's 3 a.m., you're a little bit drunk. Anything you eat is going to seem like you're at a steakhouse, and then you wake up the next morning, and you need to go get some Gatorade or something, a proven commodity that will help fix you. But these teams don't have a proven commodity to fall back on, so they're just going to be stuck with their hangover and greasy stomach, and they're going to be like, oh, what have we done?
And on that note, I have to get back to work.
And we got to start the show. Here we go.
Listen. Hello. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the Surprised Expectations edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader. I say surprised expectations. I don't even know if that phrase means anything. I think I just made it up because I said, oh, it should be a short show today. And we all know it's not going to be a short show because I don't have a producer. And that's exactly what I need here. But I do have three super fans here with me, and I will introduce them right now. Joining us from lovely Sarasota, Florida, he is our Buffalo Bills superfan, Robert. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Pod. How you doing today?
It is a lovely spring day here in the Northeast. It feels like a spring day. It smells like a spring day. It rained this morning, and the sun is about to come out, so it's a beautiful day. In Atlanta, Georgia, it is our Eagles superfan, James. Hello, James.
Hey, Pod. Hey, guys. Hope everyone's doing well. I'm still riding high from some playoff basketball last night.
Yes, and as we discussed before the show, somehow you ended up being a Washington sports fan, but not a Washington football fan.
No. No. We can't do that.
And as always, joining us from Prison Zone 6, it is Kevin. Hello, Kevin. He's our Cowboys superfan, by the way.
Hello, Jay. Hello, everyone. Glad to be back. Excited to talk about some of these illustrious quarterbacks coming into the draft.
Glad to be back because last week we, instead of doing a show like we normally do, we did the Superfan Super Mock Draft, where each of our superfans acted as the general manager of their favorite team and picked the player they want their team to pick, not who they think their team will pick. If you missed that show, please go to iTunes and subscribe right now so you can check out all of our archives, but you'll catch our two parts because it took us 3 hours to discuss every pick of the first round and have each superfan defend their pick and defend why they picked five quarterbacks in the first round. We're going to talk a little bit about draft rumors coming up in just a bit, and we'll talk about some of your reactions to our Superfan Super Mock Draft in just a bit. But the news this week was dominated by my favorite team. And so when that happens, I will make this Patriots Today for a few moments and discuss the New England Patriots moves and why I think they're kind of crazy too. It came out that the Patriots, and we will be heading to Buffalo, have signed Gillisley, the running back, to a tender. He's a restricted free agent, and it's one that the Bills are most unlikely to match. So, Rob, are you going to start rooting for the New England Bills?
Absolutely not. no. It's kind of frustrating when things like this happen and your team just, screws up the cap so they feel like they need to cut corners, and in a similar fashion to Chris Hogan last year, where they just tendered him at his draft pick. Chris Hogan.
Do you miss Chris Hogan, by the way?
You know what? You know, for $5 million, you can have his 38 catches last year. Congratulations. I'll be honest with you. I like Gillisley more. The thing with Gillisley, they tender him 1.8 for his draft spot, which is the fifth round. If they would have just spent, I think it's 800 grand more, they could have tendered him in a second round pick, and we're not having this conversation. Now he's signed a 2-year, I think it's 6.4, something like that. It's a little over $3 million a year. And it's real tough to pay a backup running back that type of money. I think I saw a stat. There are only two teams that pay their backup running back more than $2 million a year as of right now. Once Gillisley signs, the Patriots will be one of those teams as well because they gave Burkhead a $3 million deal. So I don't think that they're going to match and they'll just take the fifth, you know, they'll take the fifth round pick. But I, to me, this hands, and a lot of people are upset with Whaley. This is, to me, this is the salary cap guy of the Buffalo Bills, Jim Obendorf, just doing a terrible job with contracts and putting the Bills, who, I mean, talent wise are really, you know, a mediocre, probably average talent football team. They shouldn't be in a position where they have to try to save 800 grand by not tendering a player at the, you know, the spot that he should be tendered in.
Now, what becomes even more confusing about the Mike Gillisley move is the Patriots then signed James White to a 3-year contract extension. So he's now with the team through 2020, or at least contracted with the team through 2020. I thought, and I think a lot of Patriots fans thought, especially after the Super Bowl performance, that White would become the number one back now for the New England Patriots. I didn't believe LeGarrette Blount would be back with New England. They do need a bigger back, but I thought that role could also be handled by James Devlin, who is their fullback, H-back, sort of everything guy. They have too many running backs right now. Kevin, what in the world are they going to do with all these running backs?
That is a very good question, Pod. I for one, was sort of in agreement with you about James White. I mean, I think he showed a hell of a lot of potential in the Super Bowl. I mean, I think he had double-digit catches on the last drive in overtime. He showed, in my opinion, that he could sort of be in almost every down back. I mean, the game-winning touchdown run, he trucked about 2-3 people and just willed his way into the end zone. So, I mean, that's a good sign for everything, really. I mean, then you guys went in and acquired Rex Burkhead, who really doesn't have much experience in the league. I mean, he never really got on the field in Cincinnati. So I don't know what that says about him, or it just the coaching staff didn't feel like it was a good fit for whatever reason. But you guys, I mean, the Patriots at this point, they have too many running backs. I mean, I think that's fairly obvious. You can't possibly utilize all of them. But it's Bill Belichick, so that's why there's no stink or criticism coming anywhere from anyone. But Gillisley, I mean, although it was sort of surprising that the Patriots were interested in him, I think Gillisley's actually a really good player. I mean, I didn't really watch much of the Bills last year, but the few times that I did watch them, especially when LeSean McCoy was out, Gillisley looks more than confident enough to handle the load. I mean, I think last year he averaged 5.8 yards a carry on like 110 carries with 9 touchdowns, I believe, maybe 8. But he looks explosive. He looks like he can do pretty much everything well. I mean, he'll probably only get better in New England from what he was in Buffalo, because it just everyone gets better in New England. So, I mean, between James White and Gillisley, I mean, I don't really see much need for Burkhead or Deion Lewis, to be honest with you. I mean, having one of them will be good, but I don't really see the need to have all four of them. And then James Devlin as well. I mean, I don't know much about him. He's sort of like a New England guy, probably only Patriots fans know much about him. But it is super crowded. I have no clue what they're going to do with all of them.
Not to mention Brandon Bolden, who was a free agent, ended up being re-signed as well. And now it's just a crowded backfield, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. James, you need a running back. Would you give up any draft picks? Do we have anybody you like?
No, not New England. No, absolutely not. Now, the crowded backfield probably works for New England to some extent, but Bill Belichick always has a short fuse when it comes to backs. Look at the Super Bowl most recently when LeGarrette Blount fumbled, he was done for the day. Bolden has had that issue through many a season that he's been there in New England. The moment he's fumbled, he rides the pine for the rest of the game. I guess Belichick's thing is next man up. You know, we're running back is legitimately next man up. Everybody needs to be ready. They all know they could play at any given time. The game plan fits you know, all of their skill sets. If, you know, you could put all those things that they do individually great into one back, yeah, you'd have White and maybe one other running back and a third guy just in case. But, I mean, Bolden's primarily your special teamer who, you know, occasionally gets some touches because he's explosive. White is your all-around back. And like we said, in the, you know, in the Super Bowl, he proved to be the number one guy. And, you know, up until he got, you know, until his free agency status, Blount was basically your hammer, you know, wedge him up in there between the tackles and 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But to say that my squad would want anybody, no. And not to knock them for what they do, but they fit that system perfectly well, those three, as far as what they did. These extra signings, they're pretty much just, I don't want to say out of left field, but there's a calculated movement. There's a calculated move here by Belichick and the front office staff with New England. There's a reason they signed these guys, to fill voids, to, you know, push competition. Maybe you just stick them on the practice squad and you groom them up. But to say that, you know, Burkhead and Gillislee, you know, along with White, Bolden, and whoever else I'm missing, actually all come out of camp, not going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see as we get to the preseason how they relegate, you know, who does what during those games.
I famously once said that a running back should have been cut years before he actually was cut from the New England Patriots in Sammy Morris. So I will again put myself out on a limb and will say that Brandon Bolden and Deion Lewis are the two running backs that don't make it out of training camp. Those are the two guys that are going to be on the outs with this team. And that's mainly based on the fact that there's no way the Patriots cut Gillislee after picking him up via restricted free agency. I don't think they're going to cut Burkhead because of the contract that they gave him. They're certainly not cutting James White after they extend him. I don't understand why they would cut Brandon Bolden. Well, I don't even understand why they re-signed Brandon Bolden, because Burkhead could be a special teamer. And I sort of think that's, you know, Belichick puts a lot of value on the special teams contributions of his players, and Bolden is a core special teamer. But
isn't Bolden the returner?
No, he has played in the return role, but he is not a returner. Deion Lewis has done more kick returns than Bolden, but even Lewis hasn't been back there much. My hope would be that Cyrus Jones figures out his fumbling problem and becomes the returner, as that's one of the main reasons why he was drafted by the Patriots in the first place. More news on the Patriots in restricted free agency. Malcolm Butler has signed his free agent tender. This, of course, leads to speculation that Butler will now be on his way in a trade to the New Orleans Saints to complete the basically the Brandon Cooks for Malcolm Butler deal. Most Patriot fans that I've been talking to don't want to see Malcolm Butler go. Now, there was one scenario, and I will bring this up with you, Robert, since one of the New England Bills in Stephon Gilmore is now sort of slotted into that number one or number two spot for the Patriots on the cornerback side, that the Pats would make this trade and then pick up Devin McCourty's twin brother, Jason McCourty, to replace Malcolm Butler. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that if they do make this trade and they get rid of Butler ends up with another team, they got to make another move. You know, I'm not super knowledgeable on the New England Patriots roster, you know, like top to bottom, but I'm pretty sure that after those two cornerbacks, Butler and Gilmore, drops off. Was it Rowe? Is the other cornerback?
Yeah, Eric Rowe would be the next guy.
Yeah, you're not a fan of Eric Rowe, if I remember correctly.
Eric Rowe is inconsistent at best.
That's a nice way to put it.
And I know, and James just said, don't remind him of Eric Rowe.
So, I mean, I think that kind of tells you everything you need right there. They are going to, you know, need to make, you know, a corresponding move to, you know, unless, you know, I mean, that being said, the cornerbacks in this draft is, you know, pretty ridiculous, kind of from top to bottom. You can, I know the Patriots like to draft cornerbacks in the second round, and I think it usually doesn't work out. For some reason, I'm thinking of Rashide Dowling.
Oh, yes.
I mean, there's a lot of good ones this year that you can get first, second, or third that I think could fill, you know, a second or slot corner role.
The Patriots' first draft pick isn't until the third round, so they'd have to.
Well, they're
going to
get a draft pick. If they get rid of Butler, they're getting a draft pick, and it's going to be a higher one. I mean, so that would put them maybe at 32. Maybe they get 32 back, or maybe it's, I think, you know, worst case scenario, say it's a second round pick. I think New Orleans picks like 43 or 42. You could still get a really good cornerback at that spot. There's a lot of them out there this year. So, I mean, they'll have options, you know, probably something that they would do after the draft.
James, you want to get in on the Malcolm Butler trade rumors?
Nah, I don't think. I don't think Philly goes that way. I think they're entrenched in their draft spot because moving up is pretty much all they want to do right now in the draft from currently the middle of it. So getting Butler just pretty much means giving up our first round pick. And considering the draft is in Philadelphia, they've made a big deal of holding on to the first round pick no matter what. So, you know, creates more fanfare in the whole city, you know, to have the first pick present when drafted. Butler is a very good number one corner in the league. Definitely I put him along, you know, lines of some of the top guys. As far as where he goes and wherever he goes, the Patriots will get a draft pick for him. It's just a matter of which team they trade him to, because I have seen some things over the last couple of weeks since Butler wasn't signed that the Saints were actually pulling out of the deal, whether he got signed or not. So how this plays out before draft night, if it does play out before or on draft night, is anyone's guess. But, I mean, it does make watching the first three rounds of the draft much more interesting to see what the Patriots do and if any team takes a gamble on trading for Butler to give up their pick.
Kevin, you want in on the Malcolm Butler sweepstakes?
I mean, the Cowboys don't want in. I don't really think many people should want in, to be honest with you. I mean, I know Malcolm Butler is pretty solid. I'm just not really 100% sold on the kid. I don't really have any justification behind that reason, just a gut instinct. But, like, is it, like, 100% fact that Malcolm Butler is definitely going to be on the move, or is he a slight chance he's going to be a Patriot next year? Or, like,
well,
a good chance?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a rumor that came up when the Brandon Cooks trade occurred with the New Orleans Saints that basically the Patriots were going to try and trade Butler for Cooks. But since Butler was a restricted free agent and hadn't signed his tender yet, they had to work all of that out. Butler did meet with the Saints, and the Saints have had conversations with him. Everything has been sort of coy, though, at this point. Plus, the Saints aren't allowed to talk about a player who's under contract with another team. So
I know Sean Payton, at least in the Arizona offseason meeting, saying they weren't going to do that, but that could just be a blatant lie on his part. But, I mean, my gut feeling is that Malcolm Butler's not really going anywhere, just because, as everyone has been saying, it's a ridiculously strong cornerback class this year. You can get very good value, even in the third round with a cornerback that in most years would be a mid-early second-round pick. So I don't think this is the year to do that for Malcolm Butler, just because there's so many young options coming out from college that – and the Saints, especially, have two first-round picks. They could use one of those first-round picks on one of these promising young cornerbacks and have him under contract for 5 years for super cheap and hope he pans out. I think that would be a smarter move, but I'm also not a Sean Payton fan, so hopefully he does something dumb.
The Patriots also finalized a pay reduction for wide receiver Danny Amendola. That's fine. It looks like they overpaid for him in the first place anyway. And they just recently visited the White House. That was yesterday. Not going to get into much of that. That's pretty much been overblown. Of course, there was the tragic news that the former tight end Aaron Hernandez was found dead in his prison cell, apparently suicide. And I will leave that story as well with the one word that Bill Belichick referenced Aaron Hernandez with, tragedy, because that's pretty much all that story is just lots and lots of tragedy all over the place. And the last bit of Patriots news, seriously, this is, I can't believe how much the Patriots got accomplished this week. They released guard Trey Jackson, whom they had drafted only 2 years ago. He had played in 13 games with 9 starts in his rookie season back in 2015. He missed all of 2016. The LA Rams claimed him off of waivers today. So Trey Jackson, no longer a Patriot, now going to Los Angeles. You know, Kevin, your offensive line had taken some hits this offseason. You didn't want Trey Jackson, though.
We did take some hits. I mean, I don't think they're as bad, really, as people are making out to be. We did lose Ronald Leary, but people forget that we still have Lyle Collins, who barely played last year to injury. So the strategy, the plan is that he can just slide right in. And Doug Free, he did retire, but he was on the decline for the last 2 years. So, I mean, we have some reserve options. I mean, I don't think Trey Jackson would have made really any impact whatsoever. So I don't think he would do us any good.
So the NFL schedule is being released this evening at 8 p.m. on both the NFL Network and ESPN. My thought is, who cares? I really don't need a big, I mean, listen, NFL wants to try to make an event out of it. That's great. But I already know who the Patriots are playing this year. I don't really need to make a big deal about when they're actually playing those people. Am I the only one on this?
Yeah, I'm just lukewarm. Who you play and when you play them does matter to some extent. Certain teams you want to play more so at the beginning of the year than at the end, especially those perennial playoff squads that always end up in the postseason year after year after year when they're getting hot at the end of the season. Case in point, New England, Seattle, the Packers. Those are pretty much three teams that come November and December, I really don't want to play them. I'd rather play them in the beginning of the season when they're still sputtering around and working out their kinks. But other than that, not really. I mean, maybe the Thanksgiving Day games will have some intrigue. It's always good to see which two teams will be slated for the third game, as you know, to coincide with Dallas and Detroit hosting. So that third game is always interesting because typically it's two teams that have never played on Thursday, you know, on Thanksgiving Day before. And outside of that, the rest of it, not really.
Hey, Rob, you know, pretty much the only thing I like to look at in terms of the scheduling is making sure the Patriots aren't playing your team in late December up in Buffalo, as those games tend to be kind of wacky with like 50-mile-per-hour wind gusts.
This year, you won't actually have to worry about that. I did see on Twitter, although my timeline right now is just filled with everyone going crazy because the hockey team, the Sabres, fired everyone today. But I did see that they're expecting to be on the road for week 16 and 17 because there is something going on at the stadium for those 2 weeks. So the one advantage that the Bills do have, the weather, is something that they most likely won't get to utilize. For me, the only thing I look forward to is which division team we're going to play on Thursday night, usually on the road, and see if we are going to be get, like last year, we snuck into a Monday night game. See if we might be able to do that again this year. That would be kind of fun. I'm still a little bitter about that loss to Seattle. The refs screwed us over.
So far, the only schedule leaks that I've seen, the Patriots and the Chiefs are the most likely two teams to kick off the season on that Thursday kickoff in New England, where Roger Goodell will make his triumphant return. I left that sarcastic pause.
Rocket ovation and cheers from the crowd.
Yes, exactly. I did joke that the only thing that would make it even more conspicuous is if the NFL decided to start the season in Mexico City and just have the Raiders Patriots kick off the season. The other leaked schedule game is the Redskins Giants, to which I also said that feels like a Thanksgiving Day game. I just wish that one day we get the historically accurate Redskins Patriots game on Thanksgiving. But James, those are two teams in your division, although they're also in yours, Kevin. The Redskins Giants on Thanksgiving. What do you think?
Meh. See that any given Sunday, some random Monday night. As much as I love the competition within the division, Washington, New York just doesn't have the same feel it did when I was growing up in the 80s between Gibbs and Parcells on the sideline. Like, one, you knew somebody was going to get knocked out. Two, it was always going to be a good, hard-fought defensive battle. And three, it was going to be clutch at the end by somebody. Lately, it just doesn't feel that way. I know why they went in on a, you know, isolated on a Thursday night because of Norman and Beckham, but that's just overblown, and it's so not worth the price of admission anymore.
Kevin, your team always plays on Thanksgiving. What if you were to host the Eagles? Then it's a whole NFC East Thanksgiving Day celebration.
I mean, that would be fun. I mean, we did host the Eagles in 2014, it was, and no, did not turn out too well for the Cowboys.
No, it didn't.
But, I mean, I think the Giants-Redskins is a pretty decent Thanksgiving Day matchup. I mean, just for me, I like to see NFC East teams play, especially late in the year, just so I know which team I need to root against more. But, I mean, in regards to what you said before, I think it's more of a Cowboys NFC East than the Eagles NFC East. So the Cowboys definitely should have been mentioned first. But, I mean, regarding the schedule, though, the only thing I really care about is seeing as the Cowboys are once again going to play the Giants first week of the season, which I feel like they have like 6 out of the last 7 years. And then also when the NFC East games are going to be played and how many prime time games the Cowboys are going to play. Because as you guys know, I live in New York, not Texas. So I need to plan on which days I know I can stay in the comfort of my own house and scream as loud as I want instead of going to some crappy old bar with Giants and Jets fans. So that's the importance of the schedule really for me. But yeah, it doesn't really mean much. It's just something the NFL can to hype up to get people more excited about the draft. And
what, you don't have a Cowboys themed bar in New York City? I can't believe. I don't understand why that would be.
I mean, there probably is, but to be honest, I don't really like many other Cowboys fans. They're pretty dumb.
Oh, that's awesome. The NFL draft is coming up next week, and I'll take this moment to tell you about a couple of scheduling changes. Next week, our show will not be on Thursday. We will have a show recording first thing Friday morning, so we can give you first round reaction from the super fans on that Friday. And then the next show, the show after that, will be a full draft recap and reaction show. I will be hosting a weekend show. Yes, I'm going to work a weekend. And that will be coming out sometime on Sunday, probably late Sunday morning. We'll have that available for you. So next week's draft reaction shows will be coming a little bit later than you're used to on Friday and a little earlier than you're used to on Sunday. So that's the NFL. So that's our scheduling note. And of course, you can always just subscribe to the show at your favorite podcasting website, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, AHA Radio, so that you don't miss any of the shows. There aren't a lot of rumors going on out there. It was kind of interesting as I'm trying to keep up with what's going on. And there's not a lot of stuff happening out there in NFL draft land. Have you guys heard anything? Robert, have you heard anything?
The only thing I saw was there's rumors of, obviously, and this is a day or two old, Cleveland potentially trying to trade up from 12 to get ahead of Buffalo for Mitch Trubisky. But who knows if that's smoke and mirrors. I saw the Bills brought in Deshaun Watson today for a visit. And other than that, I mean, I haven't really seen too much. It's been a little quieter than usual. Maybe it'll pick up, you know, a couple, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days before the draft.
How about you, James? You've heard anything?
Nothing really big. I have heard the same rumor about Cleveland trying to get ahead of Buffalo for a quarterback. Outside of that, nothing really too big. There was an article I came across that showed a trade all 32 teams could make if they were so inclined to either move up or down in the first round. It was very interesting. Showed the Houston Texans probably trying to get up around somewhere between 13 and 16 if they wanted to get their quarterback based on, you know, Cleveland and Buffalo possibly picking one. So, you know, outside of that, nothing major.
Kevin, what's the latest you've heard? Anything out there?
This whole draft process is really, really taking me for a ride. I really only have things to say about the quarterbacks, really, because the rest of the draft class, I mean, the whole draft class by itself has already been discussed to ad nauseum about potential skill set, possible faults in everyone's game. But the whole thing about this draft, I mean, there's nothing, as everyone said, there's not really any new news. I mean, the draft is next week. How much more news could there be? But I just don't understand all these quarterbacks and how there's supposed to be 5 freaking quarterbacks projected to be in the first round, when in January and December, there was supposed to be none, maybe only one. I just don't get it at all. I get half the league needs a quarterback, but desperation is not becoming. Just because you're desperate doesn't mean you need to reach. Like when you're out for, when you go out on Friday night, Saturday night, it's 3 a.m., you're a little bit drunk. Anything you eat is going to seem like a steakhouse, like you're at a steakhouse, and then you wake up the next morning, you wake up feeling like crap, and you're like, oh, what have I done? And you need to go get some Gatorade or something, a proven commodity that will help fix you. But these teams don't have a proven commodity to fall back on, so they're just going to be stuck with their hangover and greasy stomach, and they're going to be like, oh, Jesus, what have we done? We just messed up our future for the next 2-3 years minimum. So they just don't get it. It's just a little ridiculous. Like, next year's quarterback class is also supposed to be really good. So, like, these teams who want a quarterback also, they're not going to be good this year, even if they draft them. So you're going to have a top 10 pick again. So just wait and get a better prospect, I think. It just makes no sense to me. I just don't know how NFL teams can be so dumb. It really makes no sense to me.
Well, and to that point, you have been railing against drafting quarterbacks, and you provided a list of the quarterbacks drafted since 2009. And really, there's a list of a lot of not very good guys.
I mean, exactly. Like, a lot of the first round guys have turned out to be absolutely atrocious. And then, like, some people in the later round, take, for example, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, only in recent memory, third and fourth round picks, they're far superior to then the Blake Bortles, Brandon Whedon, Jake Locker, Christian Ponders of the world, who had all the intangible supposedly and had the look of a quarterback, whatever the hell that means. It's just like, it is, these teams, these scouts, like, I know they're like old white people in their 60s and 70s, and they want to think that everything's like the good old days, but times are changing. You can't just draft someone who's 6'4 and has a rocket arm and call him a surefire prospect. Like, look at Jamarcus Russell. Best arm in the world, possibly, and the guy couldn't stop sipping lean. So, like, what do we come to? I think the most important part is the mental aspect, and just quite frankly, it's impossible to test that in this 3-month, 4-month period because they're not playing any games, they're not on defense, they don't have any playbook. So there's only so much intel you can acquire. So, I mean,
sort of just pot luck, unless like there's an Andrew Luck or someone of that nature who played in a pro-style system and was successful. Like all these knocks on Deshaun Watson about him playing in a spread offense and how his game's not going to translate. Like what about Mitch Trubisky and Pat Mahomes? Like, I don't know the specifics of those offenses, but they play spread offense and up tempo. And like every Texas Tech quarterback since like 1800 has put up 40 touchdowns a year minimum. It's like every year people get duped into picking some quarterback that they shouldn't. It just boggles my mind.
Robert, what are your thoughts here on the quarterbacks and the state of drafting a quarterback in the NFL?
I think the thing that, you know, we hit the nail on the head is the type of offenses that are coming out. It's not like it used to be where teams would run, you know, a lot of college teams would run pro style offenses so you could kind of compare apples to apples. Now you look at the quarterbacks that are coming out in this class, Mitch Trubisky, you know, they run an air raid out there. Texas Tech, obviously, they're known for running the air raid. Then Webb, you know, the guy who went from Texas Tech to Cal for his last season, you know, they run it was almost the exact same offense. They're all coming out of an air raid spread offense, and it's tough to kind of compare, you know, what they're doing in each one and how it's going to translate to the offense that you're running. So I do think it's difficult. The Buffalo Bills are attached right now to, I think, every single relevant quarterback that's out there. And if they draft a quarterback in the first round, I'm going to be pissed. I would rather get a proven commodity, something that you know, let's just theoretically say one of the safeties fell to 10, or, you know, one of the, the middle linebacker Foster or Allen or, you know, somebody like that, you know, at 10, I don't want to take a quarterback who might be good in 2 or 3 years and then find out he's not. And then you got to scrap it and start all over.
Well, you know, you don't have to worry, Robert, because if they take a quarterback and they break your heart, you can always root for the New England Bills once again.
It's never happening. It's never happening.
James, your team took the right quarterback of the two last season in Carson Wentz. Although when you look at some of the different statistics, and we all know you can make stats say whatever you want them to say, Wentz and Goff weren't that far off from each other.
No, not at all. And the acclimation for each into the pro game was significantly different as well, where Goff pretty much sat for, you know, mostly half the season, if not more, and Wentz started from day one. And while Wentz had some nice highlights throughout the season, there was some bad that he still needs to clean up, but that was because, you know, he was named the starter 5 days out from opening day. He didn't have much time in the offseason to work with the receivers and the entire offense to get in sync with those guys. So, you know, as much as we want to pump up, like, you know, look at the touchdown passes, you know, he had almost as many interceptions as well, and then add in another 8 or 9 fumbles, and, you know, his plus minus as far as touchdowns to turnovers is like -6, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere up around there. So, huge learning curve. He fits the offense as far as what we want to do going forward. It was a great pick. The evaluation was spot on as far as how he would adjust to our offense, and he's come along quite fine, but that's not the case for everybody. You know, as mentioned earlier, picking a quarterback is not rocket science, but it's also not the easiest thing in the world to do. I mean, in some years, you know, you roll the dice, you get lucky, you have a guy who pans out. In other years, you're busting and you turn around and drafting again 2 to 3 years later, and then you bust there and you turn around, you draft 2 to 3 years later again, and you still bust. So is that the scouting department? Is that to style a quarterback pick to based on the offense you're running? Is it, you know, based on what you think the prototypical quarterback should be? Who knows? I think the first thing is we need to get out of our own heads as far as what we deem the quote prototypical style quarterback is.
that whole thing as far as you want this guy to be 6'2 to 6'4 with this laser cannon arm and great vision, stands tall in the pocket and takes a hit. Those days are gone. That guy doesn't exist anymore. And any quarterback who does that is pretty much going to get killed in the league, mostly for being a statue. Who was it? Raiders, Marinovich, who came out, who basically was, quote, the prototypical quarterback, had all the tools and, you know, what, say whatever you want about his training regimen and his father grooming him, whatever. That guy flamed out faster than a match in water. So it's not always perfect. It's never going to be perfect. You know, I think that more teams need to find the best quarterback available and tailor their offense to the quarterback skill set and slowly groom them into being the quarterback they need them to be going forward, as opposed to this guy has all the tools and forcing him into an offense in which he doesn't fit and his base skill set doesn't translate into. And I think that's what gets lost in the college game in the first couple of years of development in the pros, is that these quarterbacks aren't really trained to be quarterbacks, for whatever that means nowadays. You know, in college, yeah, you tell the offense to the quarterback you select, or who selects you coming out of high school. But in the pros, it's, we're going to take this guy and we're going to force him into this system. When those two things don't work, coaches get fired and quarterbacks become busts.
Potential will get you fired. The Superfan Super Mock Draft, we mentioned that. It's available now. You can listen to our first round recap of that on this podcast, or you can go and read it. I believe we have our picks posted on our website. That's www.nextfanup.wordpress.com. We did get some reaction from the fans, and I'm going to read a couple of reactions. Well, specifically from this one fan, Joe, who is at Spartan Lieutenant General, tweeted us to the Eagles super fan, super in quotes, who said, mix in a small speed back. Smallwood is 5'10", 208. Derrick Henry 6'3", 247. But Mixon is 6', 225. You're right. Eyes rolling emoji. By the way, that's not the only, problem he had with you, James. Greg, was it Greg or Neil? It looks like Neil pushed him a little bit further and asked him if he agreed with your pick of Dalvin Cook, to which Joe replied, Cook is exactly the same size as Smallwood. Better, yes, but same. Did he get his info from 25 trendy things to say during the draft in Cosmo? I will allow you a chance to retort to Joe.
Oh, gosh. Okay, if I'm off on the measurements, I apologize. But as far as the overall skill set of Dalvin Cook and Smallwood and Joe Mixon, the skill sets of Smallwood and Mixon are exactly the same. As electric as Mixon was in school, I didn't see him catch many a pass. He is a speed back, which is why we already have Smallwood. He is also a speed back. Dalvin Cook is more of a complete back. You can leave him in there on every single down to catch passes, to run in between the tackles, to run outside the tackles, to pick up a blitz. This guy can be, you know, coached up to do everything, you know, even that much better. He's basically a Swiss Army knife. If I was to compare his game to anybody in the NFL right now, when healthy, it would be a Jamal Charles, a guy I would never take off the field. Does he have a burst of speed? Yes, but he's nowhere near as fast as Smallwood and Mixon, but he does things that those two backs can't do that well. And so coming out, based on what was already selected ahead of me, I chose Dalvin Cook because it was the best fit for what we needed. Again, Philadelphia needs a defensive back, specifically corners, wide receivers, and a running back. Based on our mock draft, the corner and the receiver I wanted were gone. I went with the next best need, which was running back. Dalvin Cook was the best running back on the board. It's not like Leonard Fournette's going to fall to 14.
Right.
And the Eagles aren't trading up to get him.
Well, Joe adds that the Cook pick isn't horrible, just that the logic was. He says he would have taken Lamp there and built a Dallas-like line with Peters, Lamp, Kelsey, Wiz, and Johnson.
Our line is pretty solid as is,
and we've already, if I'm not mistaken, I believe we drafted Peter's replacement last year. Vitae, excuse me, yes, who's supposed to take over for Peters. Unfortunately, he was pushed into the lineup sooner than expected because of Lane Johnson's suspension. So we already have the replacement for Peters and or Johnson should anything, you know, catastrophic happen. Hopefully nothing too catastrophic happens where we lose both of them. But Peters, once his contract is up, he's gone. I've said that plenty of times before. So, and that was my point in last year's draft after we moved up to, before we moved up to number two, is that our original draft position, I expected us to draft an offensive lineman to replace Peters. That was taken care of in the later rounds, and I'm very happy with Vitae because the best way for him to learn was to get thrown into the fire, and he learned very quickly.
By the way, Joe wasn't done with just you, James. Greg, of course, had to stoke the fire, our Steelers super fan, and took a shot at me. Titans taking a tackle. What was Pod Vader thinking? Joe's response was, don't love the pick, but Lewin isn't great and could move inside to guard, and they addressed secondary earlier in the draft, the Titans, that is. Wide receivers a need, but none were worthy at the pick where I ended up taking, I believe I took Ramchick there for the Tennessee Titans. And that was sort of the thought there was just the best player available. They don't need necessarily offensive line help, but he does improve their offensive line, and protecting Marcus Mariota has to be something that the Titans are thinking about. I absolutely would have taken a wide receiver, and I don't think I had an opportunity to mention this publicly yet, but after I had spoken with our guy from Reception Perception, Matt Harmon, and his love of Chris Godwin, I absolutely would endorse the Titans taking Chris Godwin in the first round to improve their wide receiving core. Joe, by the way, is a Vikings fan. I didn't see him mention anything about the Vikings pick. Vikings didn't have a first round pick in
all. They don't have a first round pick.
Yeah. So it's we talked our to pick. Yeah. Yeah, Justin and I talked a little bit about the Vikings pick in sort of the post-mortem of the first round, which you can hear in part two of the Superfan Super Mock Draft. All right, hey, speaking of hearing from people, you know, I made a couple of new friends, so here's my interview with a couple of other football podcasters. It's my pleasure now, for all of you who haven't put two and two together before, Pod Vader likes podcasts, and we just recently brought in a new podcasting network to Blog Talk Radio, and it's my pleasure to be talking to the Golden State Media Concepts football podcast hosts right now, Jeremiah and Anthony. Hi, guys. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
As we were talking, Jeremiah, I was getting a hold of some of your favorite teams, and you're a big fan of the 49ers, right?
I am, yes. I grew up a huge diehard fan of the 49ers my entire life. I grew up, started rooting for the 49ers when Terrell Owens was in his prime. He was like one of my favorite players when I was a kid, and then I realized that, oh, you know, Terrell Owens was really polarizing. So, but, you know, they've been my team ever since. I was even there during the 2-14 season with Dennis Erickson in 2004, and that was a terrible year. Then they got Alex Smith, and but I stuck with them through the tough times, and you know I'm sticking with them now. Times are bad, but yeah, that's my team.
Do you wish Alex Smith never left?
It's kind of tough to say because when Alex Smith was good, Jim Harbaugh was the coach, and if he was on this team now, I'm not sure how great he would have been, because you know we've seen the ceiling of Alex Smith, and pretty much we're seeing it right now.
You know, though, there was another quarterback that had a good year under Jim Harbaugh who used to be on your team too.
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick. Yeah, I know, and he's still a free agent right now, which I don't understand why. Which I understand why, but I think he should be on the team. But yeah, you know, it's tough to say if Alex Smith would have been successful after Harbaugh. Because that team was really depleted. And we've seen Alex Smith perform. Was it depleted team in his early years, and it was terrible. And we've seen Alex Smith perform on the great team. And it's kind of tough to say how good the Niners would have been with Alex Smith as a quarterback if he had not left. So it's really tough for me to say.
Now, Anthony, are you from the West Coast? Because Jeremiah said that you might be a Dolphins fan.
Yeah, no, I'm from the West Coast, California, Sacramento specifically. Yeah, no, the reason for the Dolphins allegiance, basically my dad was a Dan Marino fan back in the day. Growing up, you know, kind of through osmosis like that, became a Dolphins fan, you know, started following the team around the early 2000s, you know, one of the things that like Ricky Williams, Jason Taylor, Zach Thomas, Sam Madison, all those people like that. And it was nice. That was a fun time through for the Dolphins because they were pretty good. They were always going to make the playoffs, be in the hunt, everything else like that. Then for the last 5-6 years, not so much, but then they played the playoffs last year, so that was kind of fun. But yeah, it's basically because of my dad's love for Dan Marino and then just kind of watching it like that as I was getting older.
So sticking with the quarterback theme, how do you feel about Ryan Tannehill? Where do you sit?
I mean, look, he's not bad. Like, it's not like he is someone like a Brock Osweiler. Like, he's not a terrible quarterback, but he's just like at the, I mean, basically Alex Smith level where he's not going to blow it for you, but he may not be the reason that you win a game also, which is kind of frustrating. Like, having Jay Ajayi and people like that on the team to, like, balance out is nice. But I don't hate the guy, like, by any stretch. Like, I don't think he's terrible, but, like, I would, I guess, prefer to have a better quarterback. But then you could also be in a situation like the Browns are in, or, like, the even, like, the Bengals, who have a quarterback who's, like, fine, but, like, isn't that next level either. Like, there's worse scenarios. There's worse situations you could be in, like Jacksonville or something like that.
So the draft's coming up, and Jeremiah, I'm going to start with you because you do have the higher of the two picks with the 49ers. You know, our super fan, we just recently did our super fan super mock draft where each super fan represented their team as the general manager and picked the player that they wanted, not who they think the 49ers are going to draft, but who they want the 49ers to draft. And he went with Reuben Foster from Alabama. What are your thoughts there?
I do like Reuben Foster because they need that presence in the middle. I like that pick a lot. You know, there has been a lot of mock drafts I've had 49ers selecting Solomon Thomas, which he is a great player. I think I would actually want them to actually trade out of that pick because I think they can get Solomon Thomas or a really great player like later in the draft or probably in the top 10. In the first round, because I do think they've been linked to Malik Hooker as well as Jamal Adams. They even have Leonard Fournette making a visit. I don't know how Fournette would fit a Kyle Shanahan offense. Like, I think he probably is the best thing in the draft since Adrian Peterson. But he don't have, I don't think he fits the Kyle Shanahan offense. But I think right now they do need to work on some defense. I do like Reuben Foster. I just think number two may be a little too high, so I can probably see the 49ers trading out of the number two pick to, you know, pick later in the first round. And I think they can get Reuben Foster a little bit later in the top 10. But if they do stick there, I would be happy with Reuben Foster. I would like Malik Hooker. I do like Marshawn Lattimore, Solomon Thomas. So there's a lot of players they can select that I can be happy with. But I would have to say I think the 49ers are going to go with Solomon Thomas just because it's just they can never have too many pass rushers. And he's been the guy that's been linked to the Niners the most throughout this entire draft process.
Yeah, Solomon Thomas in our mock draft went with the next pick to the Chicago Bears. So wouldn't be able to trade out to get Solomon Thomas. As a matter of fact, all the guys that you mentioned were top 10 guys in our draft, Leonard Fournette, Marshawn Lattimore, and Malik Hooker. Anthony, your team doesn't have the convenience, I guess. I don't know how to put it. Picking in the top 10. You got number 22. Our super fan says he loves Lamp and took Forrest Lamp, the offensive guard from Western Kentucky.
That one I don't necessarily hate as much because the Dolphins, even though they've taken a lot of offensive linemen in the past few years, be it Jake Long or like on the dude last year from Ole Miss, Laramie Tunsil, like they've been taking players for the last few years in the draft, they could still use somebody around that time because, you know, people have been retiring. You have the whole situation with Pouncey, whether or not he can stay healthy or not. So I don't mind that. I also wouldn't mind them because I've seen in these mock drafts how they also have the real Peppers, the, safety out of Michigan, taking him as well, just basically trying to shore up the defense. I've also seen a couple people, Taco Charlton, the dude out of defensive end for Michigan, basically trying to get something for when you have Adamkin Sue. Well, he's really good. He's not necessarily somebody that gets you sacks. Cameron Wake has been really good, but he's also around 35 years old, so he's pretty much at the end of, like, his major productivity. Like, he had a really good year last year, but I can see that kind of winding down, so being at that spot, 22, like, you basically have to take the best player available. So whether that can be an offensive lineman, like you said, with Lamb, whether that could be Charlton over, you know, on the defensive side of the line, or whether it's Peppers, you know, kind of being the quarterback of the backfield with safety, like, if they can get any one of those three people, that'd be something, at least as far as the Dolphins, that gives them, like, a solid, at least, block for the future.
You know, Jeremiah, our super fans ended up taking five of these horrible quarterbacks in the first round. And the 49ers are a team that is looking for a quarterback. And I have seen a couple of mocks where they actually do have a quarterback going to San Francisco. What are your thoughts on the quarterback class here this year?
It is, you either love it or you hate it. That's the best way I can describe it. None of these quarterbacks in the draft this year, I don't think they're pro ready. The only quarterback I can see making a real impact next season could either be Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes. The reason why I say that is because I think one of those two guys can go to Houston, and Houston's a great team all around. But, you know, if one of these quarterbacks go to New York Jets, they're not going to be good. You know, that team is just flat out horrible all around. The Niners, I don't see them selecting a quarterback in the first round because I don't think they're in a rush to get that quarterback right now, because I think they're going to wait for Kirk Cousins next year. And there's also better quarterbacks in the draft next year as well. You know, we might have Sam Darnold out of USC, Josh Rosen out of UCLA. We might have some better guys in the class next year. But, you know, the one guy I'm not really a fan of is Mitch Trubisky. You know, I know he's been mocked to go early in the draft, but I don't think he's pro-ready. I've liked Trubisky on a team with the already established quarterback. I talked about this several times on the show. I like him on the Saints. He can learn behind Drew Brees. I think Trubisky can be a really good fit for Washington, you know, to have him sit out for first year and then play next year when Kirk Cousins leaves. So I like Trubisky if he's on a team with an already established quarterback. But as far as the overall overview of the quarterback class, you either love it or you hate it. That's the best way I can summarize it up.
How about you, Anthony? How do you feel about these quarterbacks?
The thing that always, like, freaks me out with quarterbacks of major programs that kind of, like, jumped onto the scene later on, like, it always scares me whether or not they're actually going to be as good as we think they are right now. Because right now we're kind of in the process of overhyping the players. Like, basically, throughout the entire year, didn't know really who Trubisky was. Like, you kind of maybe understood that he was pretty good, but you may not have thought he was going to be, you know, a top two, maybe number one overall pick, depending on how this goes, in the NFL draft. So it's one thing if you have, like, people from smaller schools, you know, all of a sudden start to ascend, like a Joe Flacco a few years back, or Carson Wentz last year. Like, you have people like that. But when you're in, like, a major school, and maybe I'm having the recency bias of Jared Goff from out of Cal, but, like, it seems that, like, if they're, like, all of a sudden shoved down our throats this late in the draft, like, it doesn't tend to have that much of a success. You have something like Watson, who we saw who was good over in Clemson. We saw him basically beat the closest thing to an NFL defense that you can have in college and, you know, learn from mistakes a year ago. He's the one I probably like the best just because he was able to not only get better a year later, but basically adjust on the fly, because it's not like Clemson was beating Alabama the entire game. Like, that was a struggle for them to finally come back and win. And the fact that he could do that shows that he, you know, A, won't get rattled as much, B, even when he was in college, still has enough of a game to adjust and kind of understand, okay, I have to do X, Y, and Z in order to get past. Like, it helps the fact that he could do that. Not everyone's going to play Alabama. Not everyone's going to have the chance to do it. I get that Trubisky didn't have the chance to do that, and even Mahomes, stuff like that. Like, they didn't necessarily play against best competition, but me actually visually seeing him do that makes me have the most confidence in Watson going forward.
Sticking with the quarterbacks here, Jeremiah, you know, your team, I still feel your team needs one. And there's a couple of names that I think could help improve your team pretty quickly. The real problem is, are they going to actually hurt your team in the long run? That's sort of the theory as to why maybe Jay Cutler hasn't been signed by anyone at the present time, because he's going to be good enough to get you to the playoffs, but probably won't get you any wins. And now you're stuck in that middle area of the draft next year, still looking to try and improve your team. But the other guy that I'm surprised San Francisco hasn't come calling for is the guy the Patriots have been trying to ship off to Cleveland, and that's Jimmy Garoppolo. So both these quarterbacks, I think, are way better than the quarterbacks available in the draft currently, and certainly better than the quarterbacks that you currently have on your roster. So what are your thoughts there with a Jay Cutler or a Jimmy Garoppolo on the 49ers?
I do agree that Jimmy Garoppolo is better than any quarterback in this class. That's why he was rumored to go to Cleveland in exchange for a number one pick. But I'm kind of not a fan of Jay Cutler going to the Niners. Like you said, he's not going to get you. I don't like him as a bridge quarterback right now. You know, we've seen kind of like the ceiling of Jay Cutler. You know, we thought he had a lot of potential, but that potential never came in fruition there. Sure, he can probably get you about 5 to 6 wins, but you know, right now the Niners need a lot of talent, and I think, you know, Jay Cutler is not really the guy if you want to start building a franchise from the ground up. Jimmy Garoppolo, I really do think he can gel really well with Kyle Shanahan. You know, Kyle Shanahan is a really good quarterback guy, and the reason why I don't like Jay Cutler with Kyle Shanahan, or I should say with the Niners overall, is because, you know, there's always been talk about him being a bad teammate. And, you know, you don't really want that type of, you know, presence on the team that's very, very young. And that's kind of like understaffed, I should say. So I think if we're building a team, Jay Cutler is not really the guy. But I can see Jay Cutler going to Houston. You know, he is someone that can probably get Houston over the hump a little bit. Jimmy Garoppolo, I do think he's someone that if he's on the right team, the right system, the right coach, he can be really successful. We've seen Jimmy Garoppolo this year in a Bill Belichick type system. So I do like Jimmy Garoppolo, but I don't know why they haven't been talked about getting Jimmy Garoppolo to San Francisco. I just don't know why. Maybe it's because Kirk Cousins has been linked to San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan. Maybe that's the reason why. But I do like Jimmy Garoppolo better than Jay Cutler. And I do think Jimmy Garoppolo is the better quarterback than any of the rookies coming in this year.
Anthony, I'm going to leave you with this question as you're a Dolphins fan. What's it going to take for the Dolphins to win the Eastern Division?
Like the NFC East specifically, Tom Brady basically tearing his ACL again like he did in 2008. Basically, that's the only time the Dolphins over the past, 15 years have had any kind of success as far as winning the East. I mean, the thing is, like, the team around the Dolphins isn't a bad team. Like you said, you have Devontae Parker, you have Jay Ajayi, you have people on the team that are good, that are people that, like, if you have a quarterback who can do stuff, it's just I have no idea how good Ryan Tannehill is, because one of his biggest knocks was he has the potential to do all these things, right? He could scramble around, he could move and, you know, throw on the run, but he had Mike Wallace for a few years in Miami and he could never connect with him on the deep ball. Like, that was something that was always struggling. And he got a little bit better this year with Parker as far as that goes, but he, for as good as he can be, he never exactly has, like, quote unquote, put it all together or whatever you want to say. And it's going to take that, right? Because you can take Cameron Wake, you can take Ndamukong Suh, you can take everybody on that roster, offense, defense, special team, smash it all together. But, I mean, you know as well as anybody being a Patriots fan, you need the quarterback to basically be the guy, or if not, you need that defense to be insane, like what Denver was for Peyton Manning. And neither of those things are happening. And I don't know, maybe it's just been beaten into me for the past 10, 15 years, whatever. But, like, I feel basically that as long as the Patriots have Belichick and Brady, that it's going to take a lot from the other three teams in that division, be it the Dolphins, the Bills, and the Jets. It's going to take a lot from them to finally just beat those two guys. And I don't know if Tannehill is that guy. It's basically going to take Brian Tannehill taking a whole other step and a half quarterback-wise in order for them to finally win the AFC East, considering half the stuff the Patriots got in the offseason. I think it could happen, but I wouldn't bet on it, I guess.
The podcast is the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast. Jeremiah and Anthony are the hosts. Anthony, tell us a little bit about the show. Where can they hear it? How can they find it? How can they get in touch with you?
So, Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast. We're on a variety of platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, everything else like that. Just type in GSFC football. You can find it. We do it every day, either myself or Jeremiah, talk about anything in the world of football. Sometimes we veer off. Sometimes we, you know, have some fun with it. You know, as far as football goes, we talked to Rob Gronkowski when he was in WrestleMania. We'll talk about the draft. We'll talk about anything basically involving any of the local teams here in California, but we'll also talk about stuff that the Cowboys are doing, stuff we talked about when Tony Romo was going through everything, that stuff, you know, talk about when the Patriots won the Super Bowl, anything around college, around the pros, just like to kind of talk about a lot of stuff in a fun type of way. Jeremiah, you know, he and I started, you know, to get to know each other a few months back, started doing the podcast, had a lot of fun doing it. Jeremiah, you got anything else as far as add on?
Did you tell him that you can catch the show on iTunes, Stitcher?
Also, yeah, iTunes. Picture everything else like that, every other way you can find a podcast.
Yeah, and we're also, check out the website, gsmcpodcast.com as well. It has the other podcasts on the network. And, yeah, you know, Anthony and I, we have fun doing it. You know, we talk about all sorts of stuff regarding football. We sometimes drop a little pop culture references for you guys. We even had a lot of WWE references past week because of WrestleMania, but you know, it kind of died down since WrestleMania was 2 weeks ago. But yeah, we have a lot of fun doing it, and you know, Anthony pretty much summarizes that pretty good of what we do on the GSNC football podcast.
Awesome. There you go. That's Anthony and Jeremiah. Good luck to you guys, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, right, thank you for
good.
Having
Thanks.
Us.
All right, so there we go. The Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast. I highly endorse it. Go check it out. You can obviously check it out on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher. Just search for it. Or you can go to blogtalkradio.com and go to the Golden State Media Concepts network page to check out their show. 49ers and Dolphins fans. You know, if Andy keeps blowing us off, Kevin, perhaps I should invite Anthony from the football podcast to join us.
Get a Dolphins fan to join us?
Yeah, exactly. Let's put Andy's job in jeopardy here.
I might have a possible replacement. I do know one Dolphins fan who's in my fantasy football league. Pretty smart kid. But yeah, I'll talk to Andy one-on-one off air and make sure he realizes he needs to get his act together.
Well, just don't say I'm going to be on the podcast and then not show up. Because you took a spot away from Greg or Neil or any of our other Thursday regulars. But it's always fun to talk with all of you guys, and we want to hear more from you guys out there. So send in those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com, or you can tweet us just like @SpartanLieutenantGeneralJoe. did. At NFU Podcast is our Twitter handle, and you can check out what we got on our Facebook page. And I mentioned our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. You can check out our extended mock draft. I believe we'll be posting all the picks that the super fans have made. I believe they did 7 rounds. I don't know if they ever finished it.
We just got into the 6th round.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, we're getting there. Some of the super fans aren't draft super fans. They're dropping out. So
I can imagine. I can only imagine. So the diehard draft Knicks, and you guys know who they are. You've heard them all here before. They're making sort of how are you doing it? Are you doing sort of majority rules?
At this point, it's basically me and Pat, the New England super fan, and occasionally Monty, just giving players to teams that have dropped out.
Well, there you go.
We're just trying to get through. We are way behind last year. Last year we got 7 rounds done, and I felt like most of the people were in it. This year is I think there's like 6 or 7 people left.
Well, listen.
Look, when this whole thing is done, please post a list, because I would love to see what you guys did for the Eagles for the remaining of the draft.
Well, James, you too could go to nextfanup.wordpress.com and check out the entire draft. I'm sure we'll post it there. Rob, did Dakota Cox get drafted yet?
Dakota Cox has not gotten drafted yet, but I can guarantee you he's going to.
Nice. I like that. How about any of the other guys that I've spoken with so far this season? Fred Payne? Has he been thought of at all?
You know what? I saw his name mentioned. I was scrolling through this morning and I saw his name mentioned. I don't think he was drafted, but he might have been.
We also have Tarish Webb and Jordan Bowman. Those are two other guys that I've spoken to so far this season.
Yeah, I think the only Payne might have been the only one whose name was legitimately mentioned, but we're in the 6th round. There's a lot of compensatory picks. I got a funny feeling that guys that you've talked to are going to somehow make their way off the board.
I will tell. Well, I do believe Tarish Webb, just based on the school that he went to, is probably going to get drafted at some point here in the 6th or 7th round. Not necessarily in our mock, but in real life, he has a real chance. I really liked Fred Payne. I think that kid has got a lot going for him. Same with Dakota Cox. I think both those guys have a lot of good things going for him. I really like the chip on Dakota Cox's shoulder. And any team that ends up picking him is going to have a great talent. And if he doesn't go in one of the later rounds, that would be a shame. Jordan, too. I really like the motor that Jordan has and sort of the he had the best superpower, being a super villain, to have super genius so that he can basically mess with the other team. That's the right answer to that question every single time. All right. I think that's it, guys. So we did it. We kind of almost made it shorter than an hour and a half. We're a little over an hour, but hey, we're here for you every week, twice a week, and we'll have another show for you coming up this weekend, where I believe the plan is to talk a little bit more about the later rounds of the NFL draft and sort of what the superfans did in the superfan super mock draft. And then, as I mentioned earlier, next week will be a day later. We'll be on Friday to give you first round draft reaction, and then a little earlier on Sunday to give you a total recap and reaction to the NFL draft. So for all the super fans here and for Anthony and Jeremiah, I say thank you to everyone. And with that, I leave you with Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.
By the way, I didn't get a chance to today, but I was going to fire Jeff Fisher this week. And,
We fired Jeff Fisher yet.
My replacement guy is also not employed currently. I was going to get Gus Bradley. That's what not getting better looks like.
Oh,
I think that's a good ender.
I prefer my favorite coach. This is, gosh, I can't remember his name. I'm blanking. But I'm a man. I'm 40.
Oh, yeah.
The Oklahoma State guy.
Mike Gundy.
Just ended with the Rex Ryan. Now let's go get a goddamn snack.
But Rex isn't coaching anymore. He's on ESPN now.
I know,
he's going to be great on ESPN.
He's going to be good. I think he'll be all right. If there's one thing he's good with, it's a microphone.
Exactly.
Not an NFL defense, but a microphone.
Oh, we didn't talk about Phil Sims. I meant to mention Sims. He's going
to
be in the
studio. Yeah, he's going to the booth. So he's kicking out Boomer Esiason.
Tony Gonzalez.
No, he's kicking out Tony Gonzalez.
Oh, wow.
Which is interesting. So you're going to have two quarterbacks, the coach, and Bart Scott.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if I like that mix.
Neither do I.
But I can tell you, too, I like Boomer's opinions more than I like Phil Sims.
Boomer's fun. Yeah. He's pretty cool.